You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast, episode number 199. What's going on? I am Matt O'Leary with Mitch Anderson. Mitch, what's going on, buddy?
Dude, one away from 100. Just one.
200.
Or sorry, 200. My God, I can't even count the 200, even though it's right there. Yeah, man, that's incredible. Good job by us. Psh, long distance high five.
Love it.
Not a whole lot going on here. I wrote on Twitter the other day that my fingers are killing me because I've started playing bass again.
Okay.
How's that going? Regularly. And they're just, the strings are just chewing up my fingers that don't have calluses on them.
What's your go-to bass riff? If you like, you pick up bass off the wall, right? You're going to go, what's the riff that you go play?
Carousel by Blink-182. Every time without
Ooh,
fail.
Ooh, good song. Okay. Love that.
Every time. It's the first thing I did. I haven't played in like 8 years, so I'm crazy rusty. So I'm starting off where I started off when I started playing bass like 15, 20 years ago or whatever it was. And straight Blink-182 power chord-ish, although it's not power chords, but like root notes type of thing. That's all I'm doing right now. And then I'm noodling and I'm bringing, I'm doing a 12-bar bass line as well, or blues bass as well. So like mixing it all in, trying to soak as much up and remember as much as I can. So the fact that I could do Carousel from memory,
crushing the game over there, Mitch. Love that.
What are you up to?
It's finals week at school, so my job is slowing down a little bit, and I'm loving it, and been able to take in some more hockey, which is a good thing because, well, Mitch, our hockey team is playing very, very good right now.
Yeah, the whole neighborhood around here is like, Mitch, how about them Isles, huh? Because there's a lot of French people here. And it's just kind of like, yeah, it sucks to be you guys, Sens fans. Although some of them are Habs fans, which they still think that they're running the world. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them. They're excited.
Exactly. But, yeah, Islanders doing well, right? Moving on because them dumb sleepy boys are out of here.
So the Islanders, for the second series in a row, go down 2-1 and then win the next three and take it in six on home ice in game six. So let's talk about the series and how they got there. So the last time we spoke was after the 4-3 overtime win on the road in Boston. So there are four games since then. They would lose the next one on home ice in game three, an overtime game, which if I remember correctly on the post game at the time, we were like, okay, obviously going up against Boston in a seven-game series is not easy. I don't think anyone anticipated the Islanders winning the series in five. So if you are going to lose a game, having it be a game like that and not, I don't know, well, go back to game one against the Lightning last year when they lost 8-2. Like, I would much rather take a 2-1 overtime loss and a fluky goal to boot on the game winner than getting your doors blown off 8-2.
It really comes down to that, right? Like, we lost by a goal in overtime on a lucky shot from nowhere that should have been a goal-scoring position. The Islanders played well enough to win that game. They fell a goal short in sudden-death overtime, right? It's not like they fell short in regulation. You're going, you know, if we had just tried harder through those 60. Now, we did, and we kept them to, you know, what is it? It was 1-1, and they won 2-1, right, in overtime in game four or three?
In game two or game three, are you talking?
Three. The one that the Brad Marchand goal.
It was 2-1.
Okay, yeah, exactly. So they scored one goal, they being the Boston Bruins, and we scored one goal, which is kind of what we expect from us. But we were able to keep them quiet until they scored this fluky goal. Like, this is not something to be panicked about at all. And of course, you know, there's some in the fan base that are panicked. We're 2-1 down. We couldn't win a home game. How are we going to do this? How are we going to climb above the Boston Bruins? It's just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep swimming. Yeah. Full-on Dory moment. Just keep swimming and you'll get it. And that's exactly what happened, right? Nothing crazy changed. They just did their thing and they won.
Yeah, they kind of like course corrected themselves almost in the next three games. Like they're like, okay, we're going to stick to the same formula and just, well, our goalies are really good. So a fluky goal like that's probably not going to happen again, which it didn't. Not to my memory, at least in the last three games.
No, it did not happen at all. Right? Yes, we have that one fluky goal done. Out of the series, we lost the first game, didn't play well at all. We won the second game, we pulled something out of it, and then you lose the third one. We barely lost it, though. And then from there, we never looked back.
Absolutely. So, I mean, pretty dominant bounce back performance in game five, winning that one 4-1. Just solid play all around. Varlamov was excellent, which, I mean, the four spot the next night probably doesn't look great, but he was good the rest of the way and in this series as a whole.
Right. Well, we're not going to keep the Boston Bruins quiet all the whole time, right? Like, you just can't keep that perfection line quiet. And again, like, the perfection line scored 69% of the goals for the Boston Bruins over the series. Like, they were not quiet whatsoever. No. But like, we tried our best, and it worked. So like, limit their chances. They're going to score a few, but limit as many as you can. And that's what we did through those games. And like, they scored the four in Game Five, but they scored three goals was it over the other two?
Yeah, they scored two in game six and one in game four. So there you go.
It's just, this is what you want to do against a talented team, and we're going up against an even more talented team,
of course,
and a goalie that isn't technically injured.
Right, exactly. And we're going to get into that in the second half of the pod, talking about that series a bunch. As for, you know, the Boston series, like you were saying, the Islanders struggled, I think it's fair to say, against that top unit. But what I kept thinking back to this and going back to this, especially after the Islanders pulled it off, when you wrote I don't remember the exact title, but before the series, is kind of like the keys to victory or something like that. And you had the Islanders having better depth, and Bruins fans found that and were like, better depth? What are you talking about? The Bruins are much more deep. Hello? Like, this was, the Islanders won because of their depth. Their second and third lines were the best lines in this series. And the Bruins didn't have anything. Their bottom six stunks, particularly in this series. They're awful.
I would say even bottom nine.
Yeah.
Right? They had, I have the numbers here that I just don't have them in front of me because I don't keep everything immediately in front of me here. But I'm just bringing it up here because I tabulated how many goals scored by each line. The Bruins bottom nine scored six of the 17 goals total.
Or six of the 17?
Yeah. The top line scored 11.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's nuts. Again, the top line scored 69% of their goals, of the goals in this series. The Islanders' top line, four of, let me count it, 10, 20, of four of 24.
There you go. And that's their recipe. The Islanders want it that way.
Yeah. It's 4-6-7-4, defense 3. The Bruins defense had 1. And so sorry, when I said bottom 9, I should have said 5. I included the defense scoring a goal there, my bad.
Okay, so even, yeah, take one off.
Even worse, right? That, you're right. Like, it was the depth. The depth won the day. Because, okay, shut down Matthew Barzal. Great, Kyle Palmieri is going to score. Oh, you're going to shut him down too? Cool, Jean-Gabriel Pageau. Oh, you got him? What about Brock Nelson? Oh, you shut him down? What about Anthony Beauvillier? Oh, don't forget, Casey Zizekas can still score.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Josh Bailey is like a point-per-game player in the playoffs, too.
Right? That's, yes, on paper, the Boston Bruins have more top-end talent. Bergeron, Marchand, David Pastrnak, Charlie McAvoy, right? Like, these are top-tier players.
Yes.
But after that, it falls off. And don't come at me, and I know you won't, or probably no one listening to this either, will say like, well, what about Taylor Hall? Who? Who?
He's a very good player, but he's on par with like the guys that the Islanders have, the Eberleys of the world, the Baileys and stuff like that. Which, you know, like you said, those top three forwards are probably, those three guys are probably better than every single Islanders forward. But after that, like you said, it's the depth. Lou is smiling ear to ear because they were able to do this in the way that he wanted, which was, to me, when the Islanders are clicking, it's death by 1,000 cuts. Like, they beat you in so many different ways. And sure, they're not an overpowering team. They're not a dominant team. They're not someone who's like, oh my God, look at all that star power. They play to their system well, and they have a lot of guys, every guy who just does their job and does it well.
That's really it. And they don't even have Anders Lee. They don't even have their 40-goal scorer in the lineup.
Right, exactly. I know it's been a couple years since Anders Lee scored 40, but, I mean, before he got hurt, he was on pace to go back over 30, which, go figure, we've been beating that drum for how long, Mitch? We were the don't-give-up-on-Anders-Lee crowd. And And to Lou's credit, once again, we could bring this back to Lou. He realized, hey, you know, losing Anders Lee, you can't replace him as a captain, but we can maybe try to replace him on the ice. And he went out and got two damn good veterans in Travis Zajac and Kyle Palmieri. And I know right now Zajac is playing over Oliver Wahlstrom. I mean, I guess technically.
Yeah.
And we're huge Oliver Wahlstrom fans and would love to see him in the lineup. But you're not going to hear a complaint out of me, and I assume you feel the same way about Travis Zajac's play. I think he's been very good since stepping into the lineup.
Yeah, Mr. Louis J. Lamorello made a good move in picking up...
He can't even do it.
With a straight face. How does he do that every night and then say it with a straight face? I don't know how. Yes, and that's why he strayed technically, not even technically, but from what we've heard, from other trade deals, right? He had other deals that he could have done, trading away that first round pick and, you know, some prospects that I forget about already. He could have moved someone else and brought someone else in. But the second that Travis Zajac was added into the pot, he's like, whoa, hold up. What, really? Done. Yeah. So I get that deal done today. I don't care about anyone else. Taylor Hall, who? Right? Like, I don't care. Get me the 2-for-1 because I've got, yes, Kyle Palmieri didn't do a whole lot during the regular season. But to be fair to him, that doesn't seem like a Kyle Palmieri issue. That seems like an Islanders system issue. Because they've done that three times now, twice this year technically. And whenever they brought that guy in, he's had a hard time getting into the thick of things early. It takes a while. Look how long it took Jean-Gabriel Pageau. And here we are, Kyle Palmieri, Travis Zajac, finally figuring out where they need to be, how they need to act, what they need to do. And God damn it, it's working well.
No, absolutely. And when it clicks, it's a thing of beauty because we've said it pretty much this whole segment because it's the truth and how the Islanders won this series. When they're firing on all cylinders, it's really, really fun. I mean, look at the goal totals. The Islanders are a team who they don't really score a ton of goals. 6-5-4-1-4-2 in the series.
They are the top scoring team in the playoffs, are they not?
Yes.
That's so ridiculous.
Over Colorado, over Vegas, over Tampa, all, you know, powerhouse teams, all contending teams.
And by a lot, right? Maybe not that much, but we're talking 5 goals over the next team, which are the dumb mad clouds in Tampa have 38 goals in 11 games, right? It's not like, oh, the Islanders played so many games. Of course, they're going to have more goals. They played one more game than Tampa, and they have 5 more goals.
That's nuts.
Of course, they've allowed more goals as well. That's also a problem, right? Like, Tampa's allowed. Anyways, we'll get to them. We'll get to them later.
Yeah, exactly. But in just terms of Boston, can we also talk about the Tuukka situation a little bit? Because this is so very much a thought that is weighing on my head. The Bruins fans are going to run him out of town very, very soon. And I think that is a massive mistake. I know, like, some of these box score stats don't look great, but as we talked about in the post game last night, how many of those goals are really on him and how many were really on Grizzly and the other defensemen in front of him?
Yeah, you've heard of the Dropkick Murphy song shipping out to Boston. He's going to be shipping out from Boston.
Ba-dum.
Right? He's anyways, he's a UFA, right? And with all the crap that he's had to put up with there in Boston, I could see him staying because he's been there forever. He's had success there. Why would he necessarily want to leave? And I'm sure the organization wants him to stay, you know, probably helping Jeremy Swayman be that next guy. But at the same token, he could be like, guys, I don't need to deal with the hate that I got for leaving the bubble to be with my sick daughter. I don't need to live with the hate of trying my best in the playoffs with, I don't know what the injury is, but I would imagine it's, you know, something to do with his arm because he had a really hard time with his glove hand. And this is a crap I get. It's not my fault you guys can't draft goalies properly or that the coach doesn't trust the other goalies that the GM brought in. Why is that my fault? I'm going to play. I'm going to want to play. And if the coach puts me in, that's on him if we don't do well. I told you I'm not great. But, like, if you don't have a better option, heck yeah, I'm going to play.
No, exactly. And the scary thing is, over the course of his career, he's stellar in the playoffs. But there's this narrative from a portion, not all, but a portion of Bruins fans who is like, oh, Tuukka's a choke artist in the playoffs. He has a 925 save percentage and a 222 goals against average for his career in the playoffs. Even with this series against the Islanders in his box score stats, in his 11 games that he played in this postseason, 919 save percentage, 236 goals against.
That's still really damn good.
He's not the reason why they lost the series.
Good. It's not playoff great, I should say, but it's good. You should be able to win with those numbers.
Right, and he's not their issue. I don't think so. I think they desperately need more depth on that team. But it was just that felt like such a storyline from this series that I just did not understand.
Well, let's look at their blue line, right? So they lost Chara, and they lost Torrey Krug at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's their top two guys, top out of three, right? Include Charlie and McAvoy in there. They kept Charlie McAvoy. Those two other guys are gone. I understand Chara's quite old, and I understand they weren't going to pay Torrey Krug, but, like, maybe you should have. And then so you lose those two guys. Brandon Carlo goes out, unfortunately, due to an injury. There's not a whole lot left there. Kevin Miller already wasn't playing because of injury. Like, there's not a whole lot going on there. And then you're going to be like, I blame Tuukka Rask. Well, you got Jeremy Lauzon playing like top 4 minutes. Come on. No disrespect to Jeremy Lauzon, but he's not a top four guy. He's a bottom six guy at best.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's a bottom pair guy at best, maybe seventh defenseman on a really good defensive team.
Like, that's the problem, right? Greslick as well was exposed. He's not a top two guy, but he was forced to play that because they just didn't have the cover.
Yeah, that pair stunk.
They really did. And, like, the Islanders went hard at Charlie McAvoy, but that's what, if when you're a star, that's what happens in the playoffs. Yeah, right? Like, you got to raise your level. We said it about Matthew Barzal a number of times.
And he did. Thankfully, Barzal, and that's another storyline from this series. Thankfully, Barzal did come around. Played really well. Game 6 was quiet for him, but 2 through 5 was very good for the Islanders.
He barely played in Game 6. Of course he's quiet.
Yeah, he played like 10 minutes.
I still don't understand what happened there, like, but I'm going to look at it tomorrow. I didn't have a whole lot of time to dig into it, but like the fact that his minutes were like 12 minutes on the night and he missed like a 6-minute shift that wasn't power play oriented for the Bruins, I don't understand what happened there. Either way, you're right. Matthew Barzal stepped up, and we needed him to. Not only because he's a big player for the Islanders, we already know that, but he's one of their top players when it comes to the Boston Bruins. Like, just this year, he's one of their top scoring players against the Bruins. They needed him to do that again to allow that, like, death by a thousand cuts. Because if Matthew Barzal isn't playing his game, well, that's one element we don't necessarily have to worry so much about. Sure, watch him, but, like, you know, we can maybe invest some resources closing other people down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, well, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. The last storyline I think we should get to is discipline and officiating.
Yeah, so that was a huge storyline. So Bruce Cassidy was not a fan of the officiating, and he made that abundantly clear after Game 5, calling the Islanders Saints. The officiating in the series wasn't good. I don't think it was good for either side. They're going to say the narrative that the Bruins were trying to spin was that it's only the Islanders, which I don't get that at all. Like, why would the league be pushing for the team from Uniondale over an original six team? I don't, that, like, that logic does not, like, why? It doesn't make any sense.
Lou isn't able to sway things that much. Like, I understand that Lou is well regarded everywhere, but not like this. Gary Bettman's not going to, like, move hell and high water for the Islanders, even though he's a Long Island boy. It's not going to happen. No. It would have happened a long time ago. And maybe it did, but not in this way. It manifested itself on, like, the Islanders staying on the island. Maybe.
Yes, maybe.
He's not going to move that. And, like, if we want to talk about that, like, sure, there were missed calls against the Islanders, right? Brock Nelson boarding Charlie McAvoy probably should have been called. Kyle Palmieri getting his elbow up in Charlie McAvoy's face in Game 6. That should have been at least a 2-minute minor, if not a little bit more. Nothing there. But when you flip it, you go, all right, well, sure, that happened for the Islanders, but let's talk about the Bruins. $5,000 fine for elbowing. $5,000 fine for cup check, slash. And then a $5,000 fine for a cross check. All of those went unpenalized during play. The Islanders have not seen a fine. I'm not sure why Kyle Palmieri was not fine. I was expecting it, but the fact that he wasn't is surprising. Either way, that would have been one fine to the three that the Bruins got, and you're still going to tell me that the Bruins played clean? Come on. None of them did.
No, yeah, I don't buy that. I don't buy it at all. And like I said, you could say that the officiating wasn't good. I'd probably agree with you. But at least be consistent and say that, hey, it was not good on either side.
But there's also the idea that this isn't a new narrative that the Boston Bruins take more penalties than the other team. They've been doing it all damn year.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the more penalized teams in the league, and the Islanders aren't. This isn't a new narrative. It's well-established fact, actually. So the fact that – I shouldn't say fact that again, but because how this played out in the playoffs really just kind of confirms what we saw in the regular season. It fits. The narrative fits. Yeah, the Islanders don't get penalized a lot, and the Bruins do because you take dumb penalties all the time. That's how the game works.
Yes, it does. It does. And in Game 5 specifically, the Islanders were able to capitalize on all those Bruins mistakes. And that's what really pissed off Cassidy.
Exactly, because his penalty kill all of a sudden stopped working. Right? Like, they had an 86% penalty kill through the regular season.
Yeah, they were
great.
Then
through the playoffs, 65.2 against the Islanders. That's his problem.
Yeah, that was the issue. And maybe he just wanted to go on the power play more because the Islanders had no answer for that power play.
Fair. I don't blame him for doing that, I guess. But, like, not only did it not help you win the series, but it cost you $25,000.
I hate to see it. Is there anything else from this series that you want to dive into, or you want to transition and get into Tampa a little bit?
Can we talk about, just very briefly, all the people who said that the Islanders would be found out when they don't have to play against Tristan Jarry? Where are
okay.
they at?
Should I read the goals off again? 2-4-1-4-5-6.
Like, just come on here. Or, like, the Islanders are the worst 5-on-5 team. In fact, they are the opposite of that. They are the best 5-on-5 team. Like, what the hell are we talking about here? This is so stupid.
I just don't get why no one will give this team credit. Like, why is it so hard for people to say that this is a good team?
I don't know, right? Like, because they don't play according to the I don't want to make this about analytics because it's not. It's not about analytics. We know that the analytics don't favor the Islanders, and that's no fault of the analytics necessarily, because there's no real way to quantify what they're doing. And it's not to say, like, oh, they're winning through heart and gusto and sandpaper. They are. But what I'm trying to say here is that the way they play is keeping things to the perimeter, right? So it's hard to quantify that. You can look at expected goals, I guess, or like high danger chances, but that isn't always the full story, because they'll give off high danger chances. They just they know that they're not going to go in, kind of thing. That's the type of game the Islanders play. It's basically counterintuitive to the way analytics are formed right now. And again, this is not an anti-analytic rant at all whatsoever.
No.
Love analytics.
I think we made our case pretty clear that analytics are important. They just don't tell the entire story sometimes.
And that's the case with the Islanders. They're just not telling the full story. I'm glad you were able to interject there with a very succinct point to my rambling.
I knew that's kind of what you were trying to say.
I'm glad
we're
you
a
did
team
it.
Here. We're a team.
Dream work. Teamwork makes the dream work, my friend. But that, yeah, it really just comes down to that. It's just they're able to play their system. They're able to make it work. And, man, it just fits. And because it's not the way that we accept hockey is supposed to be played today, like, it's not the Colorado Avalanche, people just can't figure, no, they're not supposed to be winning. What are they doing here? They're frauds. It's not how it works.
Yeah, when it's 3 years in a row, it's not a fluke.
Even the Colorado Avalanche, if they lose tonight, they're out.
That's very true. And then Colorado's out. And then it's Vegas and Montreal.
So. Right? And, like, everyone thought it was going to be Colorado all the way. For good reason. They might not even make it out of the second round.
Right. And like you said, for good reason. They're a great team. To me, my opinion, the two best teams in the NHL, Colorado and Vegas. It just sucks that they're playing each other in round two. That used to happen all the time with the Capitals and Penguins years ago, too.
That's true. That's right. So, like, yeah, I think the issue here that we're having is that they're not fitting the mold necessarily, and I think that suits us perfectly fine, because as a fan base and as a franchise, we never have fit the mold, so like this fits perfect.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So let's transition now. Let's get into the Tampa Bay Lightning. So we don't have an official schedule yet, but it seems like game one is going to be on Sunday, and beyond that, we'll have to see.
Right on. Okay, Sunday start, that would be great. I'm down for that. This is going to be an intense series. It really will. The Islanders, I feel, learned a lot from the last series against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Absolutely. And it was a very close, outside of the first game, which yes. You know, I talked about earlier, the 8-2 loss. That was a disaster. But the rest of the way, it was a very close series until the end. Game 6, I mean, think about it, Mitch. Game 6 was a double overtime game that they got eliminated in. So they were very inches away. Brock Nelson scores in double. Was that the single overtime or double overtime? I don't even remember.
I think it was single. Either way, it was overtime.
In an overtime. If he scores, then they're playing in game 7 in the Eastern Conference Final. Like, they took this team that, again, supposedly has so much. They do have much more talent than the Islanders, but a team that is supposed to be head and shoulders better. They took them to the brink on 6 games in a double overtime until getting eliminated. Like, they gave them a damn good fight last year. And not just completely, you know, blow everything out in the first second here of this podcast, but it was played on neutral ice.
That's a huge factor for both teams, right? A lot of this is going to come down to feeling like getting the momentum of the crowd behind you, specifically for, well, I shouldn't say not like the, it's like the Tampa Bay don't get anything out of the Amalie Arena. I'm sure it's going to be an electric factory, almost quite literally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is going to be huge for the Islanders, right? Because last hurrah, this is one final hurdle before the Stanley Cup Finals. That would be huge just getting there. And we'll see if they can get through. But like this is a quite a big hurdle. But again, I feel like they learned a lot, not just about the Tampa Bay Lightning, but what they need to do to win, right? Because the Tampa Bay Lightning, while, like you said, are more talented than the Islanders, so were the Boston Bruins, so were the Pittsburgh Penguins. The way the Tampa Bay Lightning played in the last series was playoff, like, how do I say this? Like, cagey veteran playoff hockey. They were doing all the dirty stuff, right? Like, doing picks, just playing the way that you need, like, the war of attrition against the Islanders, and they just wore them down type of thing. Right. The Islanders know to expect this, know how to play against it, or at least know how to play with it, and if anything, do it back to them, and that should play in their favor maybe a little bit more in this series.
And think about this, too. Like, for both sides, this is the first time all year that they're playing someone who they haven't played all year, or who haven't played 8 times. You know, in the regular season, they saw their division the entire way. In the first 2 rounds, it was teams they played 8 times during the regular season. The last team, you know, not in their division for this year that the Islanders played was Tampa in the playoffs last year. Could you say that, you know, for both teams, for Tampa too, this is the first time that they're playing a team like the Islanders?
Yeah.
They don't really, who else in that division with Tampa really plays a similar game to, you know, to the Islanders?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm just going to look at the standings now to get a refresher of who's in their division.
Florida doesn't.
I wouldn't say Florida. I would say Dallas plays like the Islanders.
Yeah, Dallas is probably the closest, yeah.
And Dallas didn't make the playoffs.
No.
But Dallas is an older team. Not, I wouldn't say as talented as the Islanders, specifically like through their depth. They're not as deep as the Islanders are. Yeah, they've got their guys. They've got a few guys there, but it's not the same thing. So like Tampa's used to what the Islanders are doing. Like you mentioned before, they played them last year, and there isn't a big change here really for the Islanders. Swap out Anders Lee for Kyle Palmieri. That's the difference from the last time they saw them.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it, right? I want to see the Lightning's record against the Dallas Stars this year, just to kind of give us a sense of like how do they do against a defense first team. Mm-hmm. So just give me a second here to get that data up. Come on here, Dallas, get stats. Okay, so Tampa against the Dallas Stars, 6-2-0. Ouch. Goals for, 26. Goals against, 15. So that's 3.25 goals for, 1.88 goals against. Power play, 33. Penalty kill, 87.5. So pretty damn good against a defense first team like the Dallas Stars. But how much can you say this is going to translate over to the Islanders? I wouldn't say this is a one-for-one swap, but this is obviously something to be concerned about.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think it's totally reasonable. Obviously, the Stars and the Islanders aren't exactly the same as, you know, you just kind of pointed out there, but I don't know. I think just my feeling last year and how they were able to, you know, grind it out and hang with them for the most part on in a neutral ice situation, I think the Islanders' chances in this situation where it isn't a neutral ice, that both teams will have a home ice advantage, I think it fares better for the Islanders that way than it would in a neutral ice situation. And that's not necessarily to say like, oh, I definitely think the Islanders are going to beat Tampa now because they play, you know, they're going to play three games at the Coliseum, but I think it makes the chances of that happening a little bit better. Is that fair at least?
Yeah, it's fair. We also have to consider that the Tampa Bay Lightning are actually healthy, like fully healthy. They got Stamkos back. They got Kucherov. Not Stamkos back. From last year, Stamkos is playing. Kucherov is back. Hasn't played all year, so he's fresh and scoring a ton of points, right? He's got like 15 points in the playoffs already. And they don't really have any other injuries on the blue line in nets at all. Like, their one injury is Anders Nilsson. That's it.
Yeah, that doesn't matter to them. No offense to him.
It really means nothing, right? Like, you know, former Islander, of course, but like a long time ago. They're going to be really tough to handle, right? Like they toss aside the Carolina Hurricanes in five games. And I say toss aside, like, you know, you usually say that for a sweep, but they made it look kind of easy. And that's a little bit worrying because the Carolina Hurricanes are a pretty damn good team and had a pretty damn good goalie too.
Yeah, that's true. And they were the better team. No, they finished higher. They were the higher seed.
They did finish higher. So that was a tough division, right? You had three teams in Carolina, Tampa, and Florida in there, and those were all really good teams.
No, exactly. So yeah, you got to give Tampa credit for that, and they've been good for a long time. You know, we know all the characters at this point. It's been pretty much the same team for a while now. So I guess I'll pose it to you this way. What do the Islanders have to do to win this series?
I don't know, man. Like, well, sorry. That's dumb. I'm going to say the same thing that they did against Boston. The same plan that they used against Boston. They've got to... Goaltending's got to be like it was. Not that they have to steal a game every night, but they've got to be at least around a 920. They've got to press their advantage on the power play. It's not to say that the Islanders' power play is going to be great going forward, but when they get the opportunity, they've got to make something count. The PK's got to work, obviously, because like they've got one hell of a power play there. And just stay disciplined. Stay disciplined. That's really it. They're going to get their chances at 5-on-5. They've just got to, you know, stay out of the goddamn box.
Yeah, that was going to be my answer, is they have to play a disciplined game. They can't afford to go on the penalty kill. And we saw it, you know, bite them a little bit in the Boston series at times. Boston was excellent on the power play, where Tampa is just as dangerous, if not more dangerous. So they can't be giving Tampa three power plays a game. It's just not a good formula.
It's not going to end well, because like, for Boston, you've got your, you know, let's say top three, really. We can count Taylor Hall, but like, lols. But when it comes to Tampa, my God, they just come at you in waves on the power play we're talking about here, right? Like, Point, Stamkos, Kucherov, Palat, Hedman. That's just one unit right there. And then you can still talk about like the Sorellis. Like, there's Killorn. Still more players that can jump over the boards.
Yeah, Killorn in front of the net.
Killorn, like, and these aren't like game breakers in and of themselves, but they're good players.
Yes.
And so like, it's wave after wave on the power play. Limit those chances. And they did a good job against the Boston Bruins. They've got to do the same thing in terms of discipline against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Without a doubt. To me, it's staying disciplined. And you said it, I'm going to steal it. The getting that 920 goalie play. There's no way if it goes below that, well, the Islanders are going to be in really rough shape. Because I don't know if you're going to be able to survive playing 6-5 games against a team like that.
If you're going to play the run-and-gun game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're going to lose. Because first off, they're more talented, like we said a million times, but the Islanders aren't built for that. They tried that against the Pittsburgh Penguins for a couple of games, and they lost both of those.
Right. And, I mean, like Tampa, Colorado. You can't do it against those teams. You can't. You got to go into, well, what you do best. You know, shut it down, make it hard for them to get those chances. Keep it to the outside.
That's why Vegas is winning, right? Like that, or at least up 3-2. I don't know what the score is right now, but that's why Vegas is ahead and Colorado is not, because they've played that slower pace game. They've played it to their strength, and the Islanders need to do the same thing. And I know they can. It's just a matter of will they?
Right. Absolutely. We'll have to see there, but they have done it. It's just, can they do it over four games in winning four games before Tampa does? It's not going to be easy, Mitch, but it's going to be a blast. I can tell you that much.
I'm looking forward to it again. Like, just making up for last year. I'm looking forward to this series just for that alone.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to get to in this series?
No, I think that's all we've need to say on this series. We'll see what happens and when the schedule is released, whenever the hell that's going to be. Maybe after tonight, because this hopefully is the last series left.
Yeah, hopefully we find out shortly. But as I said, it looked like on Twitter that they were talking it was going to start Sunday. So we'll see.
Fair enough.
Let's get into Down on the Farm. Mitch, what do you got for us this week?
So I haven't spoke to anyone. There's no real news coming out. I should be speaking to Ben Miragas. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I'm going to get him to tell me. I don't have a date set, so I'm not too sure. But I've been communicating with his people to try to set something up so I can learn more about him. Because his rights, his NHL rights are up August 15th, 2021. So if the Islanders don't sign him to an NHL deal, he walks. Which may not be that big of a loss, but I feel like there's something there. And by something, I just mean there could be NHL potential there. But we need to see it at the AHL level. Like, he's productive at the collegiate level. He really is.
Right.
Even though he's had a couple of down years, but there's something there. There's something that could be harnessed out of him and made into something. I don't know what it is, but I want to see Brent Thompson do something with it.
It would be nice. It would be really nice if you're able to get, you know, something out of him. Because what round was he taken in? He was a later round guy, no?
He's a third round pick in 2017.
In 2017. Okay.
So outside of that, there's not really anything. So I pose a question to you, Matt.
Oh, sure.
What three prospects do you think? I don't have an answer here, so this is really just kind of like putting something towards you. Three prospects that could make the NHL team next year.
Oh. Sallow?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Bolduc? Yeah, okay. He's going to be the second one. I always mix up him and Hutton. So I was going to say the other lefty, because Hutton's the righty, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So I was going to say the other lefty. So there you go. Third one. What constitutes as a prospect?
That's where I'm at, right? Like, it's not to say like I don't know what a prospect is, but it's just kind of like it's not coming off the tip of my tongue like that. Like, oh, it's going to be, here's the other three players that are going to be that are going to compete for a spot. It's not that easy to list off, because you're going, well, like, it's not going to be Simon Holmstrom, that's for damn sure.
No. Does Koivula have a chance, maybe? Or would you count Koivula as a prospect?
I would still count him as a prospect. He's not 25 yet. Once he gets to like 24 or turns 25, that's when I stop looking at him. But yeah, so that means you got to not count Anatoly Golishev, but you would figure he'd be also the first guy.
Oh, that's true. I wasn't thinking, yes, but yes.
But he's 26.
True.
So like, outside of that, who else? Kiefer Bellows? Is he going to be here past expansion?
I have no idea. Me trying to figure out what the Islanders are going to do with Kiefer Bellows is truly baffling. I have no clue. Not a single clue.
So that was really the point of why I brought this up, was to look at the names here, and I'm not going to name all of them or any of them outside of the ones we've already said, but you look at the names and you go, like, I don't think there's a lot of competition coming in for spots, which is kind of understandable. We're of a a vet-heavy roster, so, like, you're not going to see Arnaud Durandeau just kind of, like, pop off and steal a spot from someone, or Parker Weatherspoon step up and take Scott Mayfield's spot, or I guess another lefty instead of a righty. So I think that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that the Islanders, we should not expect prospects to start pushing hard for spots. You might have competition for a left-handed defenseman spot, and that's it for 22-21 or 21-22. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really get, there's nobody else who'm like, oh yeah, that seems like the obvious one in there outside of Bolduc and Salo.
It's going to be Bolduc and Salo going for that lefty spot, essentially Andy Green spot, and we'll see who lucks out. It's going to be one of those two, and it depends on what the Islanders want.
Yeah. So we'll see. But that's an interesting question, because, like I said, those are the two obvious ones. And then after that, it's a whole lot of shrugging and guessing.
Exactly. More shrugging and guessing. Do you want to get to the quiz here?
That was your best transition ever, Mitch.
Yes. As we do every week, I have a mystery New York Islander, Matt, for you to guess. You have 5 clues to figure out who he is. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
1, I was never drafted.
That could be thousands of players, so I don't know. We're going to say exactly. Next.
I was traded to the Islanders twice in 2 years.
Twice in 2 years? Okay, next.
3. In my best NHL season, which was under the Islanders, I scored 23 goals. I had 4 in the previous year.
This is going to be a... I'm going to say it anyway, but it's a bad guess. I don't think this is who it is. Parentel.
Incorrect, but good guess for sure. 4. I'm 72.
72 years old now?
That's correct, yes.
72 now.
Now, that's not going to be... I think you're going to have a really hard time figuring out who this person is up to this point. This is just trying to get you to figure out
age,
where you should be thinking.
Frame. Okay. All right. Next.
My first name is Ralph, and I make art out of stew.
Stewart? Ralph Stewart?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you did it!
There we go. I'll take it, Mitch. I'll take it.
So yeah, Ralph Stewart played for the Islanders between 1972, when they were a team, up until 1976, when he was traded to the Vancouver Canucks. The only two teams he played for were the Islanders and the Canucks at the NHL level. In 73-74, had 43 points with 23 goals, had 14 the year prior, put up another 40-goal season in 74-75, and then he didn't play a full year after that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's our mystery New York Islander for the 199th episode of the Eyes on Isles podcast.
There you go. Love it. Let's get to social segment. What's going around on Isles Twitter this week, Mitch?
Buddy, there's a good one going around right now. It's really incredible, isn't it? Islanders' true diehard fans remember the 4 in a row. They are sick to their stomach and the level of excitement for a round 2 win by the current majority of the fan base. Al Arbor, I spelt that one wrong, didn't even crack a smile after winning the second round.
I saw that. That's a brutal take. I'm not a Ryan Whitney guy, to
Nor
be honest
I.
with you.
Sorry, I didn't say who it was, but yeah. Surprise, it was Ryan Whitney.
I do like his beverage. So I will give him that.
It's hard to screw up vodka and pink lemonade, I'm just going to say.
Very valid point. Totally fair. Yeah, so what? That's just like, oh, fans under 40 can't enjoy anything?
First off, what's a real fan? What's a true fan, right? A true diehard fan. What is that?
By his definition, would be someone over the age of 40.
He's not even over the age of 40, right? Isn't he just 39? Isn't he 2 years younger than I am or older?
Couldn't tell you. Don't know.
I'm going to look it up now. I know he's not that old. He was not around for those. He was not. Like, it's just not a thing. So, come on here. Yeah, he's 38. He's born a year ahead of me. What are we talking about here?
I don't get it. I don't understand. You're not supposed to enjoy. You're not supposed to have fun. Don't like it.
How do we gatekeep happiness? What the goddamn hell is he talking about here? You can't be happy because you won a round. Isn't that what any and every fan base does when they do that, whether it's first, second, third, or fourth round?
Yeah, the celebrations probably get bigger and bigger each time, but like, yeah, if you're going to be one of the four teams remaining, I think you should be very happy about that.
I don't understand what the problem is. Yeah, Al Arbor didn't crack a smile. Yeah, of course. Maybe that was the fourth time he had done it, though. Maybe after a third time, you're kind of like, I expect that we do better because we've already done it three times now. I'm sure in 1974, their third year that they were in existence, they made it a couple of rounds. I'm sure the first time they won a playoff round, Al Arbor wasn't like, "Bah, we expect to win a cup, damn it, stone cold face." But I don't know. I wasn't there, nor was Ryan Whitney.
Yeah, that was a strange one. I did see that on the old interweb, and a well-deserved ratio ensued, so.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I guess I should get it because he's a Boston fan, and Boston fans are mad because they lost, which is fair. As we should be happy we won, they should be mad. They lost. That's how this works.
I know, but they direct your anger at, I don't know, your own team?
I did, right? Like, it's misplaced anger and jealousy is what it is.
Really? My next one comes from, well, my first one comes from at HeyTallGirl143. She does a tremendous rendition of When the Saints Go Marching In, and she put it out on Twitter. She's playing the trumpet. Phenomenal stuff. Might as well be Louis Armstrong.
Let's go. I saw that too. Absolute blast. Love it. I love that was a thing.
Yes.
that we took and we harnessed the power of the Saints, and we just did something with it instead of just like, oh, he said something interesting and like moved along with our day like any other dumb fan base. We're like, no. We have to sit and dwell and fester on this and make this a thing. We have to make this a thing.
Yes, of course. And because that's what Islanders fans do.
It's why they're the best fans in the world. It really is. Like, just incredible stuff. I absolutely love. That's what fans should be doing. Every fan base should be doing that. Right? The Sens started doing that this year, right? And embracing the sicko thing. Yes. Do that more, fans everywhere.
Yes. I love it. Or like the Jerks a few years ago.
Yes. Yes, the Hurricanes. You're absolutely right.
What else you got, Mitch?
This one's from B-Comp. I think we all know who he is. I asked John Ledecky today how the Isles have had so much success over the past three seasons. His answer, one, Lou Lamoriello. Sorry, Mr. Louis J. Lamoriello. That time I could do it seriously. Two, Barry Trotz. Three, an ownership group that stays the heck out of the way. We're not talking to Barry and Lou about who you're going to play on the fourth line.
Well, obviously, we know who's playing on the fourth line. On Barcy's right. Wing, maybe is a better conversation. Kidding, obviously. That's what you want from ownership. Good ownership stays the hell out of the way. Every New York franchise should be trying to copy exactly what the Islanders did 3 years ago. Every single one.
Well, like, I understand that an owner should step in when things aren't going well. Right? Like, yeah, hey, the thing that I'm investing heavily in isn't, you know, reaping a reward for me. Maybe I should change things. But when it's going well, yeah, you sit back. And the reason it's going well is because they did their due diligence. They hired their best possible candidates for each job. They had to pay, but they did it. And now you can sit back and go like, I'm going to enjoy, you know, the fruits of my labor here because I put two capable individuals in spots of power or spots of authority, I should say. And they're doing their thing as they said they would do. So why do I have to do anything else? Why should I doubt Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz?
Right. And the thing is, like, so many people say, oh my God, New York is such a tough sports town to, you know, to play in or be a part of. But look at how the Islanders fans have embraced the ownership of Ledecky and Malkin just because, like, of going about it the right way. You know, they're spending money. All you're asking is spending money. Put competent leadership in charge and stay out of the way, which is exactly what they are doing. It's perfect.
Well, like, even with the spending money thing, yeah, of course, but they're spending it in the right ways, right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, they also were there when Andrew Ladd was signed, were they not? Were they the majority owners then? Had they taken over for long?
Yes, in six going, yes. Yes, they did.
Right, but that wasn't their guy, right? They hadn't put Garth in place.
No, that was still Garth, yeah.
So, like, They corrected that. They saw that didn't work out, and they're like, no. We can't be spending $37.5 million on a player who isn't going to be playing here. That's stupid. That's not going to help. So they did that. They invested in the practice facility, right? They upgraded the infrastructure to make the players happy to bring those players in. And then they invested in a goddamn arena because they're like, hey, we kind of need one of those. And boom. And it, I shouldn't say that as if like that's an obvious thing, even though it is. And it's not like Charles Wong wasn't trying to do that, but he could only get so far. And he, the guy was bleeding money up until a certain point. So like he could only go so far with this. And then these guys stepped in. And they took 2 years to figure it out, right? They didn't just step in and say, like, no, no, we're taking this. We're going to do it. We know best. No, they took 2 years to figure it out, learn what they need to learn, and then they went for it. And honestly, that's what you got to do. Shadow for a little while before you go all in.
Absolutely. I can't wait for you to just see UBS. It's a palace. Like, it... I wish it was side by side to the Coliseum because it feels like or looks like it's three times the size of the Nassau Coliseum. It's gigantic.
Yeah. I've only seen like the steel girders. I think that was there the last time I drove by.
Yeah, probably.
And that was like 2 years ago.
Right. So it's been a while.
It's been a while since I've seen it. I've seen pictures, obviously, but it doesn't it's do not it justice the same. Until you walk right up to it.
No, it doesn't. But every week when I drive past on the Cross Island, it's mesmerizing, really.
Very jealous. I'm very jealous of you all. If I could afford living in New York, I might. I might. I don't think my wife would.
I understand where she is coming from on that. I believe
exactly.
Me.
My last one here is from Jimmy Isles. Oh, wait. No. I already did one more.
Yeah, I got one more. It's still on that on the Saints gimmick. From the New Orleans Saints, this tweet comes. So it says, hypothetically speaking, if the Saints were in Game 6 of the NHL Stanley Cup second round tonight, which Saint player would make the best hockey player? Now, I know you're not really a big football guy, so I don't expect you to come up with an answer. But I am here to pitch Alvin Kamara on Matthew Barzal's line. And the reason for that is speed, putting speed with speed, and someone who is light on their feet and who could like juke defenders out and stuff like that. So it'd be almost like having another Barzal with Barzal.
And I'm here so it'd for be the like, and he can hit, I imagine, right? He's a football player.
Yeah.
And he's probably built like a brick house, right? Like,
yeah, you know what? I'm going to say it's like peak Grabo.
Ooh, wow. I was going to say like a hybrid of Matthew Barzal and Leo Komarov, where it's all the skill of Barzal and all the like the physicality of Leo Komarov.
Yeah, I was going to go like 30 goal Grabo.
That's a good Grabo. That's definitely a good grab to have.
There you go. So
beauty. My last one here comes from Jimmy at Isles USMT, and it says the New York Saints, and it's him just dressed up as a nun.
There were some really, really funny gimmicks outside in the parking lot. There was someone dressed like a nun. There was a bunch of halos. It was awesome.
I love the fact that we leaned heavy into it. You got to do it. When the opportunity presents itself, lean into it heavy every single time, please.
Yes, absolutely love it. So that's going to do it for us. So let's get some plugs in here before we go. So if you like the coverage, what you should do is subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/eyesonisles, and that gets you even more coverage. So what do you get? You get videos of podcasts. You get post-game shows. You get winners and losers predictions, a community of Islanders fans. Videos from like so many things.
The mailbag. We have 25 things today to look at on the mailbag.
We're going to be up to midnight recording this show.
they're not a lot of long ones, but yeah, 25 is a lot. So there's a lot that people want to know about that we're going to try to give them answers to.
You could also follow along on social media at Eyes on Isles FS on Twitter. My Twitter is Matt O'Leary NY and Mitch is over at CLO Mitch. Facebook, facebook.com/eyesonisles. You could download the Fansided app and keep up with us there or visit the website eyesonisles.com for all your New York Islanders needs. Mitch, that's going to do it for 199. 200 next week. How's that sound?
Oh my God, that sounds beautiful. Let's go.
That's going to do it for us. Stay tuned for coverage. I'm Matt O'Leary. He's Mitch Anderson, and we'll talk to you next time.